Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han, and today is Thursday, August 31st, 2017. We're here with our first episode of the week. I think that we are going to have another episode tomorrow, probably. I just got back to New York for school earlier this week. Kind of been getting settled in, figuring out my class schedule, all of that. So hopefully moving into next week as we get into September and start gearing up for the preseason, I'll be able to come to you guys a little more regularly with episodes. I know that we had a pretty light August, pretty much only one episode a week in August, but there just hasn't been a lot going on. Today what I'm going to do is just pretty casually make my way through some reader emails that I have saved up to discuss, and then we'll see how it goes. So, you know, if at any point during this episode you hear something you think maybe, you know, deserves further explanation or further discussion, or you have a different topic that you want to ask about, feel free to email me lhann, H-A-N-N, so L-H-A-N-N dot clipsnation at gmail.com. It's the best way to reach me. I can get to these questions on the show, and it's all good for everyone. So first, before I get into those questions, I want to talk about the little tidbit of Clippers news that we did have in the last week or so, beginning with the Clippers D-League expansion draft, which I know we talked about in the last episode, the players they selected, how they might not all end up playing for the Clippers, returning rights, all of that. But the Clippers, or the Agua Caliente Clippers, made a couple of trades since then. So let's talk about those a little bit. In a three-way trade, the Clippers gave up the rights to Bryce Cotton, who they drafted in the expansion draft, and their second-round pick for LaDonte Hinton. Now, when I say second-round pick, that means Agua Caliente's second-round pick in the D-League rookie draft. So we just had the expansion draft, now we're having the rookie draft. It's not the Clippers NBA draft second-round pick, it's the Agua Caliente Clippers NBA D-League rookie draft second-round pick, which is coming up in a couple of months. And they got LaDonte Hinton. So Bryce Cotton has signed overseas. He's probably not going to play in the D-League this year, but LaDonte Hinton will be a big part of the Agua Caliente Clippers roster. And then they traded the returning rights to Will Cummings, another guy who they drafted in the expansion draft who is playing overseas and isn't likely to return this season, for Oklahoma City's 2017 first round pick, again in the D-League rookie draft coming in a couple months. So they managed to swap these two guys, the two guys who definitely their rights that the Clippers drafted didn't have very much value at all because they weren't going to play. They managed to flip those two for a player, and then they upgraded from their second round pick to Oklahoma City's first round pick in their upcoming rookie draft. So a nice, you know, pair of trades for the Clippers. And Chris Reichert, who writes for NBA D-League site, it's called twoways10days.com, he does really good stuff. He gave the Clippers an A- after the expansion draft, and then he actually gave them an A following their trades, because his main reason for giving them an A- and not an A was that they had picked Bryce Cotton and Will Cummings, who weren't going to play, and the fact that they were able to trade them for good value was a big boost. So we're starting to get a look at what the Agua Caliente Clippers roster is going to look like. Some of the guys that they drafted figure to play for the team: Andre Dawkins, Corey Hawkins, J.J. O'Brien, Julian Jacobs. Those four guys should all probably be on the team. Jameel Wilson, who the Clippers signed to a two-way contract, is going to spend most of the season in the D-League. What's nice is that on top of signing him to a two-way contract, the Clippers drafted his returning rights in the D-League expansion draft, which means even if he gets cut from his two-way contract with the Clippers, he'll still be in the Agua Caliente system. Whereas otherwise he would have returned to his previous team from the D-League last season. This season, even if he gets cut by the Clippers, he will stay with Agua Caliente. So that's pretty good. LaDonte Henton, who, as I just said, the Clippers traded for, will be on that roster. And then I think that Marshall Plumlee is going to be the Clippers' other two-way player. They signed him to a partially guaranteed one-year deal, which I assume, and I don't know this, but I'm assuming that his deal includes what's called an Exhibit 10, which will let the Clippers, instead of having to cut him in training camp, just convert his contract to a two-way contract and stick him in the D-League, and then basically he's your emergency big man if you have some injuries or whatever. Now, I think that this is a little bit of a perplexing signing by the Clippers. Marshall Plumlee is not really an NBA caliber player, and, you know, we're talking about D-League guys, two-way contract guys here, so you're not looking for someone who's supposed to be in your rotation. But he's 25 years old. Just the way that his game is, you know, not saying that a 25-year-old doesn't have upside, but he's just not very good. He's just tall. He's tall. That's it. He's the worst of the Plumlee brothers. And it didn't make sense to me when he was drafted, or he went undrafted last year, but it didn't make sense to me that the Knicks chose to sign him. And it didn't make sense to me that the Clippers chose to sign him this year. I thought he was for sure a D-League guy. I don't even think he's good enough to play overseas, really. He's just a D-League guy. He averaged 2 points and 2 rebounds for the Knicks last year in 8 minutes in 20 games. So he basically played 8 minutes a game in some games where they had injuries and needed another big body. And he wasn't very, you know, he grabbed some rebounds, but he just wasn't very good overall. And it, you know, I just don't see much there except for a big body and a pedigree. You know, the last name Plumlee with all those brothers that went through Duke and are now in the NBA. But I just don't see a lot there. And I, you know, it's hard to overly criticize the use of a two-way contract because they're all kind of going to be shots in the dark to make the NBA or to make a real impact on the NBA team. But I just feel like the Clippers could have gone with someone with more upside here. There's just a very little intrigue for me with Marshall Plumlee. It doesn't excite me. I'm not intrigued by it. It's basically just, I feel like a waste of a spot when they could have gotten a lottery ticket. But maybe someone in the Clippers front office is intrigued by Marshall Plumlee and thinks that he can become, you know, a backup center for a really cheap price in the NBA. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm definitely not perfect, so it could be that I'm wrong, but I just don't see a lot of intrigue here with this specific addition of Marshall Plumlee. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your life easier by saving you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So now I'm going to transition a little bit into listener emails and hop around a little bit and answer some questions. So I'll start off with an email from Kyle White, who one of his points, what I'm going to discuss here, is he says that I might be overlooking Lou Williams by putting him fourth on the totem pole of guards. He was sixth in the league in fourth quarter points last season, and Blake hasn't proven to be a closer in the past, so we might really need to lean on a guy like that in the fourth, unless Gallinari is that guy, or I have someone else picked to take shots at the end of the shot clock. Okay, so I think that this is a fair point. Lou Williams is very much in the Jamal Crawford mold in that maybe they don't fit especially well in a system, but you never, you know, no team has that perfect system, or very few teams, like maybe the Golden State Warriors, have that perfect system. And everyone else is in a situation where they need someone who can bail them out sometimes. And, you know, the Clippers have had the luxury of having Chris Paul, who's a bailout guy. He bail, you know, he makes fadeaway shots at the end of the shot clock, at the end of games, when the system falls apart. Jamal Crawford, you know, but Chris Paul, obviously, on top of that, is the orchestrator of the system. So he fits well in both cases. Jamal Crawford, one of my problems with him is that, yeah, a lot of times he bailed the Clippers out, but he also contributed to them needing to be bailed out because he didn't necessarily play well within a system. Lou Williams is similar in that respect to Jamal Crawford, where he'll be part of the reason why you need to be bailed out, but at the same time, he's capable of bailing you out, and it's very hard to build a second unit that isn't going to need bailouts at some point or another. That's why you see a lot of teams have backup guards like this that, you know, can do kind of high volume, low efficiency, where they can get this shot whenever they want, and so you don't end up with shot clock violations and turnovers and, you know, heave air balls at the buzzer. You end up with pull-up mid-range jumpers, which aren't great shots, but are still shots. Now, I'm that doesn't mean I'm budging on Lou as fourth on the totem pole of guards. I think that that's pretty clear for several reasons. First of all, I think that at least Austin and Patrick Beverley for sure are better players than Lou Williams. Milo Stojadinović, we have to see in the NBA. I have high hopes for him, but I'm, you know, just to be fair, we don't know what he's going to be like in the NBA. So I would put Milos at third right now, not necessarily because I don't believe in him or because I think that he's worse than Austin Rivers, but because he's more of a question mark, and Austin and Pat Beverley are known quantities. Now, Lou Williams is a known quantity, and when I put him at fourth, I'm putting him at fourth in what I would consider a four-guard rotation. So all of them are going to play pretty significant minutes. And I think that Lou Williams, in games when he's playing well, depending on the matchups, he might be the guy who plays at shooting guard down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Or he may come in just as an offensive substitution if the Clippers go offense-defense down the stretch of games, which we've seen them do in the past with Jamal Crawford and Luka Mbamute at small forward. We could see something like that with, you know, if Austin really emerges as the number one guard on this team, playing both ends of the floor, we could see Patrick Beverley coming in for defense, Lou Williams coming in for offense at the end of games. But you don't have to lean on Lou as heavily as you leaned on Jamal. And I don't think that Doc is going to lean on Lou as heavily as he leaned on Jamal. And I think that's a good thing, because if Lou's having a bad game, if he's, you know, 2 of 14, why would he play in the fourth quarter? But if he's having a good game, you don't have all-star guards in front of him that have to play. You know, it didn't really matter how well Raymond Felton played last year. Chris Paul was going to close games. And if Raymond Felton was going to close the game, it would be at shooting guard next to Chris Paul. But if Lou Williams is having a good game, none of the guys above him are all-star level players. You know, Patrick Beverley is a really solid starter. Austin Rivers, in my opinion, is like a fringe starter. He's probably better as a backup, but just because of supply and demand as far as available guards, he, you know, probably is like a low quality starter, but probably better as a backup. Lou Williams is a good backup scoring guard, and Milos Stojadinović, like I said, is not really a known quantity yet, so I'm not sure exactly where he fits in. But yeah, I see Lou having a role on this team. I see him sometimes being relied on in the fourth quarter, but I still think he's fourth out of the four, and I think the main reason for that is just that the team has the least long-term investment in Lou Williams of any of these guys. Patrick Beverley, they've got under contract at a really good rate for 2 years, and he seems to be the starter going forward. Obviously we'll have to see how things go, but it would seem like right now you'd kind of be planning on re-signing him 2 years from now. Austin Rivers, is the youngest guy in the group at 25. And so he's a guy who you can try to keep long term, and he has a player option for next season, so you might have him for two more years. Milos Teodosic, you just brought in on a two-year contract. And Lou Williams was sort of a throw-in in that Chris Paul trade. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't have value, but it means I think the main reason why he was a part of that trade was because he had that kind of big $7 million expiring contract. But here's a guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. He might leave the team, or next summer, I should say. He might leave the team anyway, even if you feature him. And you've got three guys that figure to be, or at least have better chances of being a big part of the team going forward. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, Patrick Beverley could get traded. Austin Rivers could opt out of his player option and leave in free agency. Milos Teodosic could opt out of his player option and leave in free agency. Lou Williams could re-sign with the Clippers and play the rest of his career here. And I'm not discounting Lou Williams or saying that they should bench him or cut him or anything like that, but I do think that he is the low guy on the totem pole as far as those guards go. And I also think that if the Clippers are considering making one more trade or at some point in the season, that $7 million expiring contract is going to be a big chip that they try to use. The other guys, you know, Beverly, Rivers, and Teodosic, because of their contract situations, aren't as easily movable in trades. I'm going to switch over to next email now from Leonard Cueva, who asks, do you see the Clippers as sellers by the All-Star break, or are we at the 7th or 8th spot in the standings? Yeah, I think the Clippers will, my prediction for them is either 6 or 7 in the Western Conference, right in that range. I think they'll be buyers at the All-Star break, but I don't know to what extent, because you don't want to sell when you're going to make the playoffs and risk not making the playoffs and blow away your momentum. But you also don't want to buy if you're like in seventh place. You're not really a championship contender, so you don't want to give up something short-term for something long-term, if that makes sense. Or excuse me, the opposite. You don't want to give up something long-term for something short-term. So when the Clippers were, you know, just for example, a few years ago, they're in third or fourth place trying to make a playoff push, it at least made some sense to trade a future protected first-round pick for a guy like Jeff Green, because you're saying, we have a window this year. We think this helps push us over the edge. And that first-round pick is down the line, where we, you know, we don't know what's going to happen then, but we know that we can really use a little bit of help right now, and it might make a big difference for us in the playoffs. So you go and make that deal. I don't know that the Clippers are going to necessarily be in a position to make a deal at this trade deadline that is going to launch them into a, you know, a really contending tier. I think when you had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, you could make the argument that if you can kind of flip an expiring contract and a first-round pick for like a fringe all-star wing, then it really would make a huge difference. Now I'm not sure that there's a move out there that would really vaunt them, you know, launch them into that next tier. So I don't think they would probably do anything that involved a future first-round pick, unless it somehow was going to bring them back a long-term piece. So if they're in a position where they can get a guy who, and I don't want to name any names, but someone who's, you know, 24, 25, 26, who figures to be a rotation player, then maybe they would trade, you know, Lou Williams' expiring contract and a future first-round pick for this guy. But I don't think that they would trade Lou Williams' expiring contract and a future first-round pick for a veteran, a guy, you know, that's at a short-term position of need that might help them win one extra playoff game or win a couple extra regular season games down the stretch and get a higher seed. I just don't see giving up future assets as being worth that sort of marginal short-term return at this point. I think if anything, it's more likely that they deal Lou Williams for picks himself, or perhaps for, if a team, for example, has a longer-term contract, like a player who's on a three-year, $24 million deal where he's making $8 million a year, the Clippers could flip Lou Williams for him and a pick. The other team gets rid of that money. The Clippers add some assets and hopefully get a guy who can also contribute in their rotation. But Yeah, I don't see them as being huge movers either way, but I definitely don't think that they're going to be sellers. I don't think that Steve Ballmer, I don't think his mind works like a seller. It's just a matter of, is it a smart time to buy or not? But I don't really think that they'll sell. I don't think that they'll be looking to flip DeAndre or Blake unless it's like actually a good deal for the team that makes the team better. I don't think that they'll be shipping off their core pieces for draft assets and prospects for a total rebuild. Ryan Knock asks, health-wise, is Blake coming back the same guy or is he going to take a step back? Well, I am not a doctor, hashtag not a doctor, but, you know, I think it's actually the real question would be, what do you mean by same guy? Because he's been a different guy as his career has evolved. And I think last year we saw maybe a handful of those bursts of athleticism that were seemingly routine during his first few years in the NBA. But he has dialed it back. I don't think he's regressed physically, but I think mentally he's made a decision to dial it back. We're seeing him take more mid-range jumpers. We're seeing him not always go for the huge highlight dunks when he's in the lane and maybe do something a little more cautious. And I think that that's just a reflection of the injuries he's had and trying to know his body and trying to stay healthy, trying to take care of himself. So I think, you know, I think he'll be the same guy. I don't think it's like this toe injury he had is going to make it so that he can't jump high anymore. But mentally, that, you know, one more injury might just be one more nudge in the direction of playing it safe all season, you know, trying to stay healthy, trying to pick his spots more carefully. And I think especially because Blake, without Chris Paul, is going to be tasked with a lot more of the offensive creation, I think we will see a little bit of a drop off defensively, and we might even see a little more fatigue from Blake this year than we're used to, because he's just going to have the ball in his hands a whole lot more. Ryan also asks, where do you think both Blake and DJ are in terms of the trajectory of their careers? Do you think they have realistic room for improvement, or do you think they have peaked, or worst case scenario, do you think they are going to decline? I think DeAndre right now is a good example of a guy who's at his peak. I don't think he'll get much better. I think maybe he can be more effective if he's routinely engaged, just depending on what his role is, the situations that he's in. He might get the ball more this season just because, you know, Chris Paul will be taking less shots. He might get the ball less because he doesn't have a guy like Chris Paul there to pass to him. But I think DeAndre is a really good example of a guy in the NBA right now who's at his peak. And we'll see for how many years he can sustain this level. I certainly don't expect a decline from him this year. But you see, you know, maybe 3 years from now starting to trend downwards a little bit. But what you also see with guys like that, a guy like Tyson Chandler especially, who you sort of hope DeAndre is modeling his career after, as Tyson's athleticism declines, he's a guy who's played for so long, played in so many good systems on good teams, that he's so smart that his positioning has improved. And he, you know, he knows how to play as his athleticism goes away to still be effective and still be in the right spot, even though his athleticism isn't always bailing him out as much as it used to. And so that's what I hope to see from DeAndre in the next 3 to 5 years. But I think that this year we're going to see a continuation of his peak. As far as Blake goes, I think there's some room for marginal improvement, but I think that more than improving, it's just going to be about production. I think he's going to be doing stuff that he's been able to do all along. You know, he might hit the same percentage of mid-range jump shots, for example, or just a marginally higher percentage of mid-range jump shots, but he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more. We're going to see more creation. We're going to see him doing things that maybe he did once or twice a game, 4 or 5 times a game, and in that case, this could be the best season of Blake's career in terms of output. Although I'm not sure that he's going to be a substantially better individual player than he was before. It's just going to be, the team's going to need much more output from him. They're going to put the ball in his hands a lot more often. More from Ryan. Do you think DJ can be expected to make steps forward on his offensive game? We know he's been working on his post-up game, but so far it's looked pretty awkward. The Clippers went through a phase a few years ago where they would throw DeAndre the ball in the first possession of every game. They throw it into him in the post, he'd do his thing, and it was just like, let's make sure we get a DeAndre touch, let's make sure we don't forget about him, And after that first possession, okay, now let's play. And that was a little forced, but it wasn't horrible. I think more than because of DeAndre's limitations, more just because of the limitations of the post-up game in general, we won't see the Clippers going to it very much. The post is just not a super efficient place to score from in the NBA with these high-level offenses and these elite three-point shooters. And what you need in the post is more than a guy who can score, a guy who can pass. Because when the defense is keyed in on a guy in the post, now all of a sudden you open up lanes to hit shooters. And that's something that Blake can do very well because Blake is a very good passer. And I'm not sure that DJ is quite there. And so I think in order for the Clippers to really look at DJ as a more legitimate regular post option within their offense, he'll need to develop his passing skills. Because just shooting those little jump hooks, I don't think he's going to be able to do at a high enough rate to really make it worth incorporating that in a major way into the offense. And then last question for Ryan. He asks, do you think Blake goes even farther back towards the three-point line? I do. In the second half of last season, Blake was shooting threes much more regularly, much more comfortably. Going into the year, he actually said he was going to start shooting threes. He had a slow start. He went away from it. Then when he came back from that knee injury, he was shooting threes regularly. He was hitting a very good percentage. The sample size isn't definitive to say that he's a good three-point shooter yet, but presumably, as he continues to work on it, he obviously hasn't had much of the summer to work on his game, but through training camp, building on what he had before, I think he will shoot three-pointers more regularly this season. I think it's going to be big for him because the most important, one very important aspect of being a good three-point shooter is that it forces the defense to play close to you on the perimeter, which gives you more space to drive. If a guy's playing 5 feet off of you, it's very hard to drive past him because you're more driving at him. But when he's standing right next to you on the perimeter trying to take away that three-point shot, you're able to use that first step to get around him. So Blake really proving to defenses in the early part of this season that he's a legitimate threat as a three-point shooter, I think could be big because it will force guys to take a step out on him, and then he'll be able to drive past them and get to the hole. If he starts out cold from three, it could force defenses to, try to leave him open all season, which will result in him not being able to be as effective going to the basket. But I think it's actually very important for Blake to get a really strong start from the three-point line during this season. That's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Clippers podcast, coming to you here on Thursday afternoon. Like I said, we may have another episode tomorrow, Friday morning. Email me some questions, tweet at me some questions. Let's figure out some stuff to talk about. Let's keep the Clipper conversation going, even here in late August, where there's not a whole ton going on in the NBA. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHand. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Be sure to check out the Clips Nation blog at www.clipsnation.com and follow the Twitter account at ClipsNationSBN. If you like the show, please leave a positive review on the podcast app. And thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.